Good afternoon and welcome to By Graham, our new show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, the hippest, most happenest, hoppinest show. Okay, 3, 2, 1, and scene.
Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hurst, the host of By Graham. No, that's... Hey, when something like that happens, you just roll with it.
At least you know we're live, because we would never intentionally put that kind of whatever that just happened on the air.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's how we roll, so... But,
yep.
Speaking of last week, what professionalism. I bailed mid-flight, and these guys just kept on rocking, so you gotta love that. So that's what live's all about.
That is what live's all about.
Do it live, as we used to say on the old show. Do it live!
Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading Open Sources, the podcast, from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Today, we will be going back to the United States, where the presidential primary goes on. Trump had a terrible week, which naturally didn't hurt him at all. And Hillary Clinton is kind of getting fed up with Bernie, and it's showing. And you thought winter was long. Well, this is just long, right? We'll also deal with another leadership test. Tom Mulcair is coming up for review at the NDP convention this weekend at Edmonton. You've heard probably a lot of the dissatisfaction from the party, and I don't just mean since the election, but I mean in last week. Are they going to pull Mulcair's card? And if they do, can anyone step up and succeed him? And then finally, we will talk about at least one election success this week, and that was Brad Wall's re-election to a third term as Premier of Saskatchewan. And how did he prevail when Alberta flipped politically just 1 year ago? And might he be the best person to keep the right united?
Dun, 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 dun.
That's called foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm.
But first, you've probably always associated Panama with that horrible Van Halen song, but now it
horrible.
Is being...
Horrible?
What?
I was going to sing it a cappella because I couldn't find the CD. So.
Well, now you got probably heard of the Panama Papers this week. If you were looking for a good place to do business, and by do business, we mean don't pay taxes, Panama is the place to go. There was an info dump from a Panama law firm, and I want to get the name right, Mosaic... Fonseca?
Jose Conseco, yes.
Well, that's another crime altogether.
Yes.
but a worldwide consortium of investigative journalists received this leak, parsed it, and actually there's a really great podcast I was listening to before the show on the media that just, they had the head guy describe how they did all that research. It's a good listen. It's only 60 minutes long, too. It's well worth listening to. Anyway, they parsed it, and then they started releasing articles this past week. A number of names you recognize in terms of realms of politics, business, celebrities, all of whom seem to be in the business of making sure that they don't pay their fair share of taxes. And that seems to cover a wide range of people. You have David Cameron, current Prime Minister of Great Britain. And you had like the usual suspects like Bashar al-Assad and Mugabe and
every
and
Middle
Putin.
Eastern leader by the sounds
like the, yeah, the Kingdom of Saud, pretty much.
And then Jackie Chan!
And
Aishwarya
yes.
Rai. It's like, Aishwarya Rai, come on. But yeah.
The most beautiful woman in the world also doesn't like paying taxes.
So there's something to that, I think. But yeah, there's definitely a pattern. And I love this consortium of investigative journalists, and the way they did this was like, well, we don't have a guy in Iceland. Hang on, I know a guy, and we'll get him to crunch the data. It's sort of like they're farming it all out. And then, of course, that was the first big casualty was Sigmundur Gunnlaugsson. I hope I said that right.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter now because we don't have to talk about it anymore because he's history. And sounds like they're going to have a snap election. And it sounds like, and I love this, that the Pirate Party are the contenders for the throne. It's like, it's amazing how something like this can throw everything just for a loop.
If your politicians are being pirates, then make pirates your politicians.
Exactly. I think, yeah, they should adopt that. That's good. So, yeah, we're talking about trillions. It's not just millions. Like, there's trillions out there. And this is just, you know, they're scratching the surface. 2.6 terabytes worth of surface is a lot of information. It's going to hit home. We're not sure how hard yet. There don't seem to be any names in the news, but it will come out. The rumor is, or the estimate is, there's 350 to 400 Canadians on that list.
Yeah, and that was the weird part. No Americans or Canadians have been announced so
yet.
Far.
But yeah, yeah. I think they're going to wait. They're going to hold off for maybe a bit of the, you know, silly season or till things slow down. Or maybe they don't know yet for sure, but they're coming through the data. And it sounds like Canada has lost somewhere in the range of $6 to $8 billion in taxes, and of course the Canada Revenue are rubbing their hands together, saying, "Well, hey, that's a quarter of the deficit. Why don't we go after that?" So, will they get it? Who knows? Because it's been said a few times, it's not actually illegal to have an offshore bank account. Because if it was, I'd probably be in jail because I have one. But you know, try and talk your—it's a whole other story. But you know, when certain bank cards don't work in other countries, it's really handy to have an account there. But I won't go into any details. I'll just tell you it isn't the British Virgin Islands or Panama. But yeah, so anyway, and it isn't just £30,000 as is the case with Cameron. We found that out before news time that he was humming and hawing because his father, Ian Cameron, had a lot of money in British Virgin Islands. And it turns out Cameron only had a little bit of money, but you know, £30,000, nothing to sneeze at because, you know, in Britain these days, if you, you know, have an extra room in your council house, they punish you. Anyway, so.
Oh, I thought you had somewhere else to go with that.
No, I could go all day with this one, so over to you.
Yeah, the familiar resign of the week was, yeah, it's not illegal, but, you know.
Wink.
And that was the Financial Post editorial. I was like, nobody was doing anything illegal. They were just rich people protecting their assets, yo. And it's just like, you're kind of missing the point that, you know, you're kind of expected in society. Our old colleague Oliver Rockside would say taxes is your, like, your entry fee to being part of Canada.
Yeah.
Or wherever you live. And if you're not paying full price, you know, if you're paying, like, the early bird special price, when you can afford, like, for the full sit-down meal, how is that fair to the rest of us who don't have options or don't have the money to, hoard away our savings and wherever because we don't want to pay some extra tax? And we're talking about huge sums of money, like you said. You know, if you're someone who's worth $9 billion, is the extra $1 million, $2 million you pay more tax radically going to affect your life? No, but for the people who get like the average refund from CRA, the average refund is $1,800. That can mean a world of difference for people, within a certain price bracket. Yeah, so it's just like really quite flabbergasting to see greed laid out for all to see like this.
Yeah, and but that's the thing when you're in this realm of cash, when you're at this level, it's never, ever enough. And who were we talking about? I think it was Warren Buffett. Mm. We're talking about Warren Buffett. He's up there, right? It's like $32 billion. I'm making up a number. I think it may even be higher than that. But it's never, ever enough. And if somebody's going to take your cash away, this is what drives capitalism, right?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's going to take that away from you, because you're a job creator or whatever, you know, you use the you can use the lingo all you like.
Yeah.
It's still not right. I mean, what, you know, even if your taxes were $1 billion, if you've got $50 billion, it's just pure greed. It's like, well, you know, and then they will say, well, we're not really breaking any laws, but in some ways you are. And of course, interestingly enough, the first to come out, and there may be a bit of this too, the beating on Putin. And then, of course, Putin has said, well, it's just the West trying to beat on me.
Well, but, worth noting his name isn't on any of these.
It's his pal.
He has friends and family and the guy who owns his favorite ski chalet.
Yeah, and the viola player, whatever, this is an interesting kind of tie-in, right? It's got, if not movie of the week, it's got Oscar contender all over it. This type of film is actually very popular right now. It's like the rip. It's like, it's pretty much a modern heist movie, right? You know, this is how we do heists now with computers and hiding things. It's not guns and, you know, it's not the Italian job. It's more like the British Virgin Islands job. But, yeah, and also, I mean, the cast of characters is the usual, you know, arms dealers and mining tycoons and that. But it's the political angle. I mean, if people think that politics and business are separate entities, they talk about the separation of church and state.
Yeah.
Business and governments are so – not all of them. Most governments are so intertwined. You see it in an example like this. It's huge, right? It's just it's a bottomless pit, I think, of who is – and, of course, it touches Hollywood as well. And FIFA. You know, yeah. Anything that's in the – any event or any whatever that involves billions of dollars, whether it's sports or a corporation or whatever, they're going to be on this list, right? It's like an alternate universe where it's like, well, we exist here. Above the fray. We have a yacht that comes out of our yacht that we take to boot around on, right? That's,
yeah.
We can't conceive of this world because it's otherworldly, right?
Yeah. I do like that idea of the yacht.
The yacht that comes out of the yacht.
Yeah, and then there's a helicopter on the back of the yacht.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are almost so huge. I can understand how it would kind of wash over people. Not just the numbers in terms of financially, but I mean, we're talking about 2.6 terabytes of data, 11.5 million documents. And it's worth noting that one of the reasons this is kind of slow to come out, this wasn't an info dump akin to WikiLeaks, where Assange put everything on there on the internet for everyone to parse.
Mm-hmm.
The journalists have been quite... clear that, you know, the old-fashioned way, somebody gave them a box full of documents and they're going through them. So, like, this is what you need to know. This is...
And in complete anonymity, too. It's a very kind of deep throat thing. It's just like, or whatever they're going to... They will come up with a name for this person. They're like, you want some stuff? Here it is.
Yeah.
Are you interested? What was it? Are you interested in some files? Here they are. And then...
yeah.
And everybody went, ah, what?
So it's very delicate, very deliberate work. So it will be a while before we get the full accounting of of what happened here. But yeah, I mean, this is one aspect of the problem. We've talked before on the show about dead cash, like corporations just sitting on millions and millions of dollars, or billions and billions of dollars, not doing anything with it. That's money that could be reinvested, that could be put into R&D or new buildings or infrastructure, paying employees more.
No, you can't do that.
So, you know, they're just, you know, remember the 80s and greed is good. Well, greed is a bit better than good now. Greed is kind of the religion almost in terms of greed must be – our greed must be protected at all costs. And this is what this is about. And then this kind of came up at the town hall Lloyd Longfield had about the budget the other night. It's just like, yeah, you know, we have these Panama Papers now that say people are, you know – they're really rich. They're not paying their fair share. It's like, yeah, it's really nice that the Trudeau government has said, you know, if you're in the 1%, you're going to pay a couple points more on the income tax. But Canada has some of the lowest corporate tax rates in the world. In the world. And that's still not good enough for some companies who are forming offshore trusts and accounts and shell corporations to hide their money. They're going to Ireland, another tax haven. And it's just the thing it comes down to in my head is, when is enough enough? When will you have enough money? Put a price on it. What is the dollar amount that is enough money for you personally and enough money for whatever company you're fronting? Is there a correct amount? Because I got to tell you, I've never been a billionaire, but from where I'm sitting, $1 billion and $50 billion probably doesn't make a whole lot of difference to your daily lifestyle.
No, and I think in some ways it may even be a competition thing where it's like, you know, the Park Avenue types are all trying to outdo each other. And we actually haven't heard, like you said, from the Park Avenue types yet. We haven't had the Canada-US dump, let's say. But yeah, I mean, and of course, as a story like this, as I said earlier, it turns me into the small M Marxist that I think I am anyway, right? So you just point to this and say, see, here you go. You want to talk about a broken system. I'm sure, you know, Bernie Sanders had exploded, among others. We're going to talk about him later. But it's just like this proves the point completely. And we're hearing the language turning back to the whole 1% and, you know, terms that we heard a couple of years ago with Occupy in that, where it's like, this is all, it's not even the 1%. It's like some of it's like the fraction of the 1%. But I love the first thing I read about this is like, you know, here's something The Simpsons predicted 20 years ago, and Krusty had an offshore bank account, and you look at this little clip and you say, oh my God, that is exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So we got Trump, we got the, you know, this offshore accounts, which everybody knew about. I saw a clip too of Elizabeth May talking about it in Parliament. Or something related, right? Like of 2012. She was on top of this already. So it's like, it's not as if people don't know. But they, of course, they don't know the degree. So we're going to know. We're going to know a heck of a lot more. And I've got a feeling that this it may have a bit of a cascading effect. Anybody that works for any of these firms that's ever been wronged or pissed off or figured that they weren't getting enough money at their job are going to say, psst, you want some terabytes of data? Go here. So yeah, that's we're definitely going to see more of this. And
well, that seems to be that seems to be the direction, because this was the biggest data dump since WikiLeaks. So you have to figure in a couple more years, there's going to be an even bigger data dump.
Oh yeah, and just think it was actually pieces of paper. I mean, it's inconceivable how many it'd be like trucks.
You couldn't do this 20 years ago.
No, whereas absolutely you can just go not. Send now and
yeah, it's all in a thumb drive.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, probably not with 2.5 terabytes. I don't know how big a thumb drive. I have like a 16 gig thumb drive at home that I've been using for years. But anyway.
Old school.
It's not that old school. I also have a 250 megabyte thumb drive that I got like 15 years ago. And that was like top of the line.
People know me now as Mr. Blackberry, so I'm willing to talk. Call me Blackberry Hertz. Anyway.
All right, let's talk about the U.S. election, speaking of billionaires and people who hate them. So there was the Wisconsin primary the other night for the Republican side. It was seen as the next last best chance to defeat or at least throw a monkey wrench into Donald Trump's ascension. Ted Cruz won and achieved an additional, I think it was 40-some-odd delegates. But either way, it's looking more and more likely on the Republican side that it is going to be some kind of brokered convention unless Donald Trump suddenly sweeps all the remaining primary states. And there are some big ones coming up. New York is, I think, in 2 weeks. And then there's California. So those are like the two biggest crowns left. Although, again, it does seem highly unlikely Donald Trump will collect the remaining 500 some odd delegates he needs. Meanwhile, on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton lost Wisconsin. Bernie Sanders won. It was the seventh of victory out of eight for him, which is very impressive until you look at the delegate counts. Hillary Clinton has 1749, which puts her about 600 away from the 2383 needed to secure the nomination. Bernie Sanders has 1061, but the race is a great deal closer once you take superdelegates off the table, which some people are saying, yes, let's take the superdelegates off the table, because Bernie could always like, hey, come over to my side, superdelegates, and I don't know.
And you never know. They could be swayed. I doubt it very much because they're part of the party apparatus, right? So it's difficult because Bernie is, you know, he has been around a long time, but he still is a bit of an outsider. And of course, as we've seen both on the Republican and the Democrat side, that people really dig an outsider like Sanders, who just, you know, speaks his mind, says it like it is. I saw a clip of, it was actually of all Republicans saying, well, I don't really agree with Bernie, but, you know, he's an honest guy. And we don't think he's a bad guy. And it's like, wow, it's like they were actually saying, they were saying nicer things about him than they do about each other. Like, what was it? Trump called Cruz a puppet? He's worse than a puppet. Like, I don't know how you're worse than a puppet. Puppets are all right, but and a Trojan horse. You know, there's still that back and forth. It's not as bad as it was.
That's what got me. He's like, he's worse than a puppet. He's a Trojan horse. What does that mean?
He's a Trojan
horse puppet. Two entirely different things.
That's because, I think people are realizing it, that Trump is just saying stuff. There's no depth to the policy, right? Is there a policy? I don't know. Like that, the got a lot of ink this week. They punish women. You know, you need to punish women who have abortions. And it's like,
and that was entirely off the cuff.
Because, well, everything is off the cuff with him, right? But, I mean, I don't think, if I've got it right, I don't even think Christians see it that way in terms of, you know, the punishing of the sinner. It doesn't really matter the religious angle of it. But I think that did hurt him to some degree in terms of just the stuff. Well, I mean, it's got to get to a point to where he's damaged. And also, Scott Walker was campaigning against him and for Cruz, right? So, and if I understand it right, on the Democrat side, Hillary didn't even go. She didn't even go to Wisconsin. She just didn't bother.
I believe.
She was busy. Was she in New York or something? It's like, well, this is probably more important, so I'm going to go here. So,
yeah, you might be right. I'd have to double check, but that does sound right. She didn't even give a sort of concession speech on Tuesday. And neither did Trump, for that matter, which is kind of weird.
They're just kind of letting her go. But, yeah, it seems that and I guess on the Republican side, too, that Kasich is still kind of sucking just enough votes away, right? It's just that little trickle of votes.
That was an hilarious thing.
Enough.
Yeah, that was an hilarious thing this week where I think it was Monday or Tuesday, Donald Trump gets up and says, John Kasich needs to get out of the race. He's stealing my votes.
Vote stealer.
And yeah, it's
so much for democracy.
Yeah, it's
he's like the Ralph Nader of now.
The thing with Wisconsin though is like you gotta ask yourself: is John Kasich really stealing his votes, or is because John Kasich I think barely got into the teens in terms of his voter percentage? So is he really stealing votes? Because I think a lot of people still look at Kasich as like, I can't vote for Trump. He's a wild card. I don't know 100% what he's for other than being for himself. I can't vote for Cruz. Well, no, it's not even that Cruz is a wild card. It's just that Cruz is like the anatomy of everything that's wrong with the Republican Party that even some conservatives will say is wrong with the Republican Party.
There's some dislike there amongst themselves.
Yeah, well, and he's also personally not liked.
No. Thought it was bad with Romney, but Romney seems to be a bit of a star compared to Cruz in terms of the talking circuit or whatever they do right now.
Romney's like Jim Carrey next to Ted Cruz. But the yeah, so people are looking at Kasich's kind of the protest vote. And that's I think that's probably good enough reason for him to be in it. He's more of the establishment guy than Ted Cruz. Like, John Kasich's never shut down the government. He was never a Tea Party darling. He's worked with across party lines, heaven forbid. So no one except Ted Cruz and Donald Trump are saying he should get out. There's no groundswell in the Republican Party that's saying, John Kasich, you're done, you're toast, get out of the way. There seems to be value to having him as a protest candidate.
Sure, and there's a lot of people that have been nuked so far, like just out of the running. So remember they were all lined up in front of that jet. It was like, oh my God, they got to thin this herd sooner rather than later. So
wow, that seems like forever ago. The debate at the Reagan Library, yeah. The thing with the Trump and the abortion thing, yeah, it was off the cuff, like everything Trump said. But it takes a special kind of rhetorical flourish to honk off both pro-choice and pro-life, which is what he did.
Trump-like. Yeah.
And you could tell this is something that actually affected him because he had to walk it back. He walked it back. Trump never walks back.
No.
He doubles down, triples down. And so that was really,
higher.
Really telling. And then on Monday, he brings out Melania Trump, his wife. And last night, he brings out Ivanka, who like gave birth like 3.5 seconds ago. So he knows he has a problem with slightly over half of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So and then he gets up and he says, my wife and my daughter are always telling me to like act more presidential. I'll do that as soon as I win. But that's, you know, it's kind of stuff that is not going to win the people who aren't already for Trump.
I don't know if I should say this, but he seems to me like the kind of guy that may have actually fathered an abortion at some point. You know what I mean? Like, no, you know what I mean, though, right? When you're a player like that, he's got the beautiful wives.
He's one of those guys that, you know, a woman probably came to him and said, hey, I'm pregnant, and then he gets out his billfold and
like,
says,
we're talking
about
Mad Men period style where she just went somewhere else.
He does have that Don Draper vibe.
Yeah, exactly. He's Draper-esque, but not as handsome yet. We'll leave that for another
Donald
day.
Trump is no John Hamm. I'll give you that.
John Hamm might have a better shot at I don't think he's a Republican. I don't even know. But anyway, so among the Democrats, there was this interesting bit where they said, oh, Bernie Sanders gave an interview with the I think it was the New York Daily News. And like, oh, it was stumbly and this and that. That seemed to be getting a lot of press. But somebody who was there from Democracy Now! Said that it actually wasn't that bad. Like it was, it's one of those things when you're reading it as opposed to when you're there, you can probably put any spin on it that you like. But this seems to be a bit of the whole trying to chip away at Sanders' popularity. But I wouldn't say he's unstoppable, but he is. He's probably even surprised himself as to how well he's doing because it was.
Yeah.
He's won 16 states. And territories. Hillary's won 14, and there was three like statistical ties, right? Yeah. I got those numbers right.
So it's
like,
so.
You know, if it was winner take all, he would be ahead, right? But they have these magic numbers in this. What was that whole? What the hell's a superdelegate? I've never seen one in my life. You know, I think that may be Saturday Night Live and not Saunders talking about it. It probably is. You want to know what's going on, watch Saturday Night Live, at least the first 10 minutes of it.
The thing with the superdelegates is, it's like, you can have your debate about the appropriateness of superdelegates in a democratic process, okay? But there are probably a lot of people on the right or in the GOP right now who are wishing for some superdelegates.
Oh, yeah.
But the superdelegates are a thing. Obama won with superdelegates. You know, that seemed to be okay 8 years ago. And the thing about superdelegates is, yeah, it's like the party. It's the loyalists. And, you know, when you're looking at it at the end of the day, who's done more for Democratic politicians mm-hmm. who form the membership of the superdelegates, Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders?
Hillary.
So, yeah, looking at it that way. The newspaper interview, yeah, I don't think it was as bad as the Clinton campaign would like it, but it did highlight something very particular about Bernie Sanders, is that there's not much of a plan to do the lofty things people mm-hmm. are kind of flocking him to do. How do you get universal health care? How do you get universal college tuition?
You just do it.
Yeah.
I think he probably has more philosophical backing on what he says than Trump does remotely, right?
Well, I think this is problematic for the Democrats. And I'm going to be writing more about this on the weekend on the Open Sources site. But there didn't used to be an ideological smell test like this for Democrats. But there has been for the last 20, 30 years on the GOP side. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of led them to the rut they are in now, where Trump is able to swoop in and take advantage of the situation, because they've had candidates becoming more and more ideologically pure and kind of at the same time becoming more and more phony, which lets Trump, who is quote-unquote legitimate or quote-unquote genuine, to swoop in. So mm-hmm. this is the problem when I look at Bernie supporters, is that they have the ideological smell test. There's the woman who confronted Hillary about, like, why are you taking money from fossil fuels? It's like, well,
and Hillary started screaming at her.
It's nice to sort of be able to pick and choose this is a game of winner take all, and you mm-hmm. gotta, and if you're gonna play to win, you got to play to win.
Yeah, there is that strange kind of tick all the boxes thing, and I think I noticed it when Rubio was still in the game about the. He had to make a point of making some statement about the Lord Jesus Christ coming down, and it was like,
yeah,
it's like it's script, right? But it's you need to sort of tick all the boxes and say, okay, if I say all this stuff, I might get the gig. But there doesn't. It's philosophy, right? It's not, you know. Is there a hard basis in that in terms of, I don't know.
But it's like, do I sound Christy enough for
Christy.
You? You know,
not and, crusty, but crusty.
I mean, if you want to genuinely slip in scripture, like, you know, MLK used to, or even JFK used to, JFK would, but drop in a bit of scripture.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But when you're like, okay, I got to have three mentions of Reagan, two direct quotes from the Bible.
Check.
Yeah.
Check.
it starts to sound phony. And then you start to understand why Trump comes out and can just say the most inglorious,
get him out
crap
of here.
Imaginable, and everyone's like, what did he say the other day about the wall? He said, you know,
we don't need no education. No, I don't.
Well, he said we're going to pay for the wall, and it's going to be great. And then he came out with a plan for how they're going to pay with the wall, and it's basically philosophically just like finding every illegal immigrant in the United States who's sending money to Mexico and
get that money,
catching them in front of the Western Union and ripping them off.
Shake them down. Yeah. The brown shirts, whatever. But it's not, just very quickly, it sounds like this Republican convention could get very into the contested convention could get very interesting. It seems like there's a panel of 112, like two from every state and territory, and it sounds like the rules of how they decide can change on the fly as well. Like they can just get to the convention and say, okay, we're going to do this now, which will potentially shut out people that they don't necessarily like, a la Trump, Cruz, and whatever. So it sounds like if it comes down to it, which it probably will at this rate, that they can just sort of, you know, move the goalposts however they like and say, we want this guy, and it will be a guy. As far as Republicans go, anyway.
And of course, he had Roger Stone, who was a Trump surrogate, come out, I think it was on MSNBC or one of those channels, and say, what we're going to do is we're going to give out the hotel rooms and phone numbers of delegates who don't vote for Trump. And it's like, oh, wow. Way to make it weird,
right.
Guy. Anyway, we're going to cut it there. We're going to take a break and come back and talk about Canadian politics. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph, 250 watts of community power.
Give me the money, show me the money. That was, of course, Money, but wasn't the Beatles. It was the quasi-Beatles. That was music from the motion picture Backbeat. I was actually looking for music for the motion picture Oh Brother, We're Out There, so I could play in the jailhouse now for the esteemed Dean Del Mestro, who's gone back to jail. But anyway, that was a rockin' band with Dave Grohl on drums, Mike Mills on bass, all stars. Backbeat's a good film, I think. Adam would back me up on that, probably. You're going to say, I've never seen it.
No, I'm sure I've seen it. I can't place it at the moment.
It's a while ago. It's the Beatles in the early days. 1994, there you go. Boy, does Hertz date himself every day or what?
You know what? I probably remember that from like one of those days at school, like the last day before Christmas or the last day before summer when the teachers were...
They did that? Like drag out a regular movie? It wasn't like Romeo and Juliet, the...
We watched Ace Ventura, Pet Detective on the last day of art class in grade 10.
Well, okay. I can see art class, but not like, all right, music appreciation or whatever
have
now.
That's probably where I encountered it.
There you go.
But I do remember the movie. But of course, like the Beatles are used in like every other movie. So
yes.
Anyway.
So, Backbeat, available on... Downloading.
Someone you probably remember seeing Backbeat in the theater is Tom Mulcair. He is terrible segue, but there you go.
That was awesome.
Tom Mulcair, as you may recall, was expected to lead the NDP to government in the October 19th election. He, of course, did not. Justin Trudeau became prime minister, and Tom Mulcair went to self. Induced exile for 3 weeks and
coma. Sorry.
So now it seems that I don't know if it's a real possibility. I'm not 100% sure it's a real possibility, but it is a possibility. He is up for review as leader of the NDP this weekend at the NDP's convention in Edmonton, and I don't envy. What he's facing this weekend.
No, and even just the grilling alone, even if he does get the gig, which I wouldn't say the jury's out, there's some very fixed opinions on what will happen. I'm kind of liking the caretaker theory in that they don't really totally have to decide who the leader is now. Mm. They can wait. So if they just sort of keep Mulcair for a little while, which would give whomever the contenders are a little bit of time to build their portfolios. That is definitely a possibility, but it depends on how militant, let's say, the NDP want to go. And if you want to have a look at my Facebook feed, you'll see a lot of people that aren't too happy with Mulcair. However, the people that are there are actually lots of establishment types. Let's say a lot of the major unions, including CUPE.
Peggy Nash
backing him. Also, Vegas, Ruth Ellen Burseau, can't say anything bad about him. It was very interesting to hear Nikki Ashton's, who's been named as a contender. It was a masterful dodge, her trying, not actually saying, I back him. It's sort of like, well, we need to look at all the possibilities kind of answer, which
Charlie
means.
Charlie Angus, too.
And Charlie Angus. And also Sherry DeNova, right, from Toronto. She's written extensively and been interviewed in left-wing left-wing publications saying he's got to go because he's not, you know, traditional values, blah, blah. And of course, the out-and-out blow-in of the election. So, you know, there's...
Even though it was the second best finish for the NDP of all time.
Yeah, yeah, but what was all that talk about? We just need 36 more seats or whatever.
I know,
so, plus, also with the rumblings that are going on elsewhere in the world, we talked about Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn. I think a lot of hardcore NDPers that probably lean more towards the glory days of the CCF kind of like what those guys are saying. It's like, well, if they can have people like that at the helm, why can't we have somebody like that? And I think one of the main problems is that they don't really have somebody waiting in the wings with the cred that Jeremy Corbyn, been around for lots of years, the same with Bernie Sanders. But, you know, when you think about it with Mulcair, I mean, the Sun paper chain gave Mulcair a thumbs up. This is the Toronto Sun, the antithesis of the NDP, won't hesitate to call them socialists, even though they're not, for the most part. Let's balance the budget. You know, that's not a socialist statement in the slightest. Right. Let's not say it's not possible, because Tommy Douglas did it many times in a row, which the NDP will not hesitate to quote. But that is the past. And you can learn from your past very much. So whether we're going to see a more latent model in the future, sort of pink but not reds, or, you know, is there going to be a... you know, however, 3 days that shook the world this weekend, and we're going to see a new leader emerge from the ashes of the old. And
right, the one thing that's going to keep Mulcair in his office is the fact that there isn't anybody ready to stand up. There isn't like a Paul Martin figure, let's say, who's ready to take
who's
over.
Who's done his 40 years,
right?
Kretchen.
Yeah, exactly,
whatever.
And
or her 40 years.
Well, yes. So, I mean, that's going to sort of keep him. And people can rumble all the day long, but remember the huge rumble there was before Tim Hudak's leadership review in 2012 after losing the 2011 election? Everyone's like, yeah, he's got to go. He blew it. He blew it big time. And then he gets to the convention and it's like,
we'll keep him around. Yeah, he's okay.
Yeah, he's okay.
He's conservative.
It's fine. Yeah, we don't want to do it right now. It's fine. but there is a schism in the NDP. For sure. You have a lot of big-name NDP people like Avi Lewis and Naomi Klein, for example, who are like saying, you know what? We need to go with the Leap Manifesto, and this is like fifth guaranteed income, universal health care, universal dental care, pro-union, heavy environmental, like no tar sands developments at all. And that's the one wing. That's probably the loudest wing of the party against this. And then the other wing is the wing that got Mulcair elected in the first place. And this is the interesting thing I heard a Quebec journalist say, is that there was a dichotomy in the Quebec electorate specifically, because Quebecers remember Tom Mulcair as a cabinet minister in the center-right government of Jean Charest. Mm-hmm. And then now you have Mulcair, who's leader of the super-lefty NDP, saying things like, let's balance the budget and these other things. So it's understandable that, although you know you can hold two things in your head at once, not everybody does, but it is understandable the cognitive dissonance in the Quebec voter. The other thing I'll say in Mulcair's favor is that the NDP has shown a history of staying the course. Mm-hmm. It took Jack Layton 4 elections to get to official opposition, and 50 years for the NDP to get
Mulcair
to official
lose
opposition.
The official opposition. Right.
Right.
So I think that's.
But I mean, it was his first election.
Yeah.
And the NDP is typically not of the like off with their head is when an election is lost in the same way the Conservatives or Liberals are. So he needs time to refine his message. He needs time to find a way to walk that fine line between the super left NDP and being, I guess, the difference between being ready for primetime and not ready for primetime. There has to be a fine line there. Trudeau learned to walk it, so Mulcair has to learn to walk it too, and he has to figure to get to the left of the Liberals now that the Liberals have gone to the left of the NDP too. Yeah,
that's right. And Trudeau learned how by being more like the NDP.
Yeah.
In people's minds.
Sure.
So, yeah, and this is one of the key problems too, is that the NDP is pretty much having and I can't remember who said this exactly, an existential crisis. Who are we?
Yeah.
You know, are we that party of Tommy Douglas? Are we, you know, the farmer labor union vote, which, you know, that structurally doesn't even really exist in Canada anymore. It's like, who is our base?
Yeah.
Is it the workers like it used to be, or is it, you know, disaffected liberals and maybe even Greens? They need to decide, and a lot of that will come out in convention, where they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the Leap Manifesto. I, you know, if there's a sort of leaning towards that, and maybe not necessarily a wholesale adaptation of it, of saying, yes, we're going to try, then that would be a signal that they are going to go in that direction. Because they've done a lot to move away from the left. And I've, you know, we've spoken about it before, I think, at length, about getting rid of the socialist clause, the S word.
Yeah.
So you've gotten rid of that. Then you're not really a less, you know, there's social democrats everywhere. As far as I'm concerned, the liberals are pretty much social democrats. These liberals.
Yeah.
Are social democrats, right? So it's like, where are we? Where we should be in the great scheme of things? And it's interesting what – there is really no number. We're talking about flexibility at convention as to what constitutes will Mulcair stay. There is no hard number. It's like I think he's saying, well, 70%, and then it's like, well, there's no real specific number. It's, you know, is it 50% plus one? Is it 80?
Yeah.
It's not going to be 95. We know that. So it's a numbers game at this point as to whether – he's going to stay. And I think it also depends on, you know, who gets to convention. Now, they, mind you, the NDP, I think it works. They do decide the leader, you know, a leadership review is at convention. But to decide the leader, all party members can vote, right? So it's mm-hmm. unlike the other parties. Or maybe they've gone that way too. I don't know. But I know specifically they can, because that was what I think it was around when I left, was when that became available and Leighton won. Not that I was ever hardcore for years, but never mind my own politics, but they do, I mean, people know me that I lean this way. So I don't know if I'm going to be watching like a hawk, but I'm going to at least be following it to see, definitely where this goes. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be the rise of the socialist caucus and, you know, red flags over Ottawa, but, a shift is required. They need to shift from where they are somewhere.
It's worth noting there are red flags over Ottawa every day. It's called the Canadian flag.
It's red and white, though.
All right. But I think the big problem is, and Rebecca Blakey put her finger on it, is that it's too white.
And I saw that. Did she get any flack for that?
I don't know if she got any flack for that.
Very frank speaking, but it's true. Sorry, NDP.
That's part of the problem is she didn't get any flack for it.
Yeah.
I would have thought for sure she'd got flack for it, but I think – That speaks to some kind of agreement. Like, yeah, maybe we are too white. Because you look at the Liberal bench, a lot of brown faces.
Yes.
Look at the Conservative bench even, a lot of brown faces there too.
It's true too.
So it seems to be in the NDP mold that maybe there are a few too many white faces. And maybe addressing that is going to change it more than changing leaders.
That's a very good point. I think, yeah. I mean, there'll be overtures. There'll be like somebody will want to pass a resolution saying we support unequivocally Black Lives Matter, but won't be a black person. I shouldn't say – you should not say that.
No.
But the odds are really good that it won't be, in my opinion. But that's for them to sort out. So they got to, you know, have a
– As long as nobody from Black Lives Matter sets out another offensive tweet in the next 48 hours.
Yeah, that's – We should probably talk about that another day too. But
yes.
in fact, we'll put it on the short list of things to talk about another day.
Yes.
Like the NDP.
Speaking of Tommy Douglas, though, Saskatchewan had an election on Monday, a provincial election. Brad Wall is now the second longest serving premier after Tommy Douglas. And unless he's going to run in like two or three more elections, Tommy Douglas will likely wear that crown for a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a pretty decisive victory for Brad Wall. He got 62.6%, or the Saskatchewan party, I should say, got 62.6% of the vote. The NDP got 30.36% of the vote. And the rest of the other three major parties combined, Liberals, Green, and PCs, barely got 7% combined.
Wow. Sad trombone for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's – I didn't realize it was that low. That's kind of – that sort of feels sorry for them. But yeah, I don't know. It wasn't really an NDP clobber, and they gained a seat.
They got a seat.
They got a seat. Woo! So they can't say that it was
their leader did not.
But their leader did not. Cam Broughton didn't get his seat, and that's the same thing happened to Dwayne Lingon. Klingenfelter, is that his name? Anyway, it's a repeat again of the Brad Wall comfortable majority. He's supposedly the most popular premier in Canada. I can't really listen to him when he's on, but I do because we do a show and we got to talk about him. But he was positing some interesting things that he wants to do in Saskatchewan. One of them I sort of latched onto was this. I don't know if I don't want to get too technical about it, but there's a concept called the patent box, and it's actually representative of a checkbox on a tax sheet where you want to bring companies to your place, either province or wherever, or country. You bring them there and you give them a tax cut. And in other places, the tax cuts are something, it's like 10% or 15%. It looks like they're going to give corporations a 50% corporate tax cut for like 10 years to come and patent, you know, bring your patent technology to our province and give us jobs. And a very interesting approach. Very, very, I see it's a very conservative approach. But I guess he talks a lot about growth and this kind of thing. You know, if you're going to stimulate growth in a market that can't be stimulated, which seems to be the case, these are the kind of things I suppose you have to do. And it looks like the majority have spoken in good old Saskatchewan.
What interested me was the oil prices didn't crash before the Alberta vote last year. But it was definitely, like, on the horizon. Like, there was definitely the smell in the air that the good times were coming to an end. And now we have Saskatchewan. The good times have come to an end. But Saskatchewan has chosen to stay the course. And although it's never been part of one party, like the Saskatchewan Party, before that, PCs were in office. There's been a kind of comparative conservative dynasty, like, I mean, right-wing philosophy. Not big C conservative, as in the party, but it's been kind of another streak in mm-hmm. a sense too. But Brad Wall, he did not release a budget before the election. There weren't too many promises made. There weren't a lot of real financial pledges. They're broadcasting, or they're forecasting, I should say, about a $260 million deficit for this year. And then next fiscal year, they're saying it's going to be a $50 million surplus.
Interesting.
So it's either they know something we don't know, or he's being like super optimistic. But perhaps there is something reactionary to what's happened in Alberta. There's been a lot of a lot of negativity about, you know, when we talked about this a couple of weeks ago with the Condata protests, you mm-hmm. know, there's a rural kind of dissatisfaction with what's going on with the NDP in Alberta, whether it's legitimate or not. So perhaps Saskatchewan looked at that too and said, you know what, devil you know. I mean, it was Cam Broughton. Cam Broughton, his first election. He only lost by 262 votes in his own riding, but...
Well... What I heard from Wall was the usual stuff. Where are they going to find the money? I don't know if the patent box is going to be the magic bullet, but what I heard him say was the old finding efficiencies. So that means how are they going to find the money? It's going to be cuts, right?
Probably.
Efficiencies equals cuts. If you hear somebody saying that, no matter what level of government, it means cuts. So this is the only ways you can find it. You raise taxes or you cut things. It doesn't come from anywhere else. Really, unless they discover more oil or reopen the pot.
or it suddenly goes back up again.
Reopen the potash mine. But the Saskatchewan Party is interesting in that it started as a coalition of sorts. You were kind of hinting at it there. It was, I think it was even like four conservatives and four liberals decided we're going to go this way. And politics, the further west you go, get interesting because, you know, Christy Clark's liberals are really a conservative party. They're liberals in name only, right?
Yeah. So they're, oh, yeah.
That's the way liberals work, right? You know, 10 degrees left or right, whatever, depending on which way the wind blows. I don't think any of those original liberals were in the race this time. So it sounds like they are pretty much a conservative party in the guise of the Saskatchewan Party. So, we were speaking about sort of minorities, let's say, before. The first Muslim MLA in Saskatchewan was elected, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah.
Mohammed Fayez. So that's... If you're trying to find your mojo, you need to...
It's a positive step for sure. Mm-hmm. The thing with the Liberals is interesting because the Liberals... I wrote it down. Now they ran like 19 out of the 61, so they ran like one-third of the number of seats. in the last election. And I guess the provincial party thought that they could ride some Trudeau coattails because they ran a full slate this time. And it didn't work out at all because they didn't – like they have 3.5% total popular support.
That's toilet support. Like in the toilet support. Sorry,
yeah,
not toilet support.
But I'm well better than the Green Party and the PC Party, but still marginally. So, I mean, it's interesting there. I think it was Iverson in the Post who – no, it wasn't Iverson. It was
Iverson.
Somebody else.
Yes.
Who's like, well, this shows the limits of Trudeau mania. It's like, come on, really?
Yeah, and they'll probably say it's – I think I heard too, but it's, you know, well, look, the NDP won Alberta and they can't win Saskatchewan. We're talking about a different beast here. But NDP had a little bit of problems. We've talked about it before, the social media problems. It sounds like they had 4 candidates dumped due to postings that were deemed inappropriate. One of them was kind of funny about the guy calling Jesus dude on Easter or something like that. Jesus dude, thanks, man. But then one of them was – and I'm not sure who this is attributed to, that Brad Wall's mother should have taken the abortion pill. You know, that's probably fireable. It wouldn't matter what your party was.
Yeah.
But again, this seems to keep coming up. So if, you know, if you're ever going to run for politics, either delete your Twitter account now and start fresh. Read the manual. you know, don't go on the fly. And if you think it's going to be cached somewhere, get rid of that too. Or, you know, just
burn
don't
down
bother.
The internet. Burn it
just,
down.
Because there'll be a dump of not even terabytes somewhere that will expose you for the rogue that you are, even if you're joking around. So something to watch, potential candidates, Saskatchewan or otherwise.
And yeah, that was kind of a big mistake because the NDP did have big ambitions. What's interesting is the NDP wasn't the NDP itself wasn't expecting a W for Saskatchewan. Their goal was like to get 18 seats. Like if
it's a modest goal.
It was like if we get 14 to 15 seats, great. If we get 18, we're going to be doing super bad. And
if we get 30, we'll be the government. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, yeah, but
we only need 40 more seats. Yeah, I don't know.
So they, you know, their goals were modest. Like nobody was expecting a huge Brad Wall upset, and this is probably a good segue here. The people were hoping, or at least some people were hoping, Brad Wall was going to win because a lot of people are looking for someone to step up and fill the big shoes in Ottawa of Stephen Harper. A lot of people are doubting that, or at least some people are doubting that McKay would be able to unite the party in some way. And some people are doubting Kenny has a temperament to be able to do the same. So a lot of people are looking for a new friendly face of federal conservatism, and they're wondering if Brad Wall might be it.
Yeah, because it probably isn't Kelly Leach, right?
Kelly Leach or Maxime Bernier, who has also filed his papers today.
We can play a song again, because I love that song. The Maxime Bernier election song. Maxime! Yeah, it's a joke so far, I think. Sorry, in my view. I mean, I don't know. These people are probably very serious at what they're doing. But, you know, will there be a barbaric election practices line opened? I don't know.
Well, that's going to hang to her neck.
Yeah.
Not that it was her idea.
She'll
but
just say, I was just reading the script.
Yeah, they put her face on it, which is...
But it means we'll see that the shot with the dress over and over again until Bernier leaves the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the dress, right? The dress, so...
Yeah. Yeah,
because that's how the media works. We don't, but you know the rest of them do. So,
no, we put a picture of Mulcair shaving.
You're expecting Mansbridge to go vroom, vroom, vroom. Yeah, I don't know. Well, seriously though, I mean, this is so stupid. They don't have any other footage of Bernier. No, probably not.
Do we really need to underline the potentiality that Mansbridge is kind of a lech? I mean, isn't that sort of text at this point?
Yeah, I wasn't even going with that attack, but yeah, now that you mention it, so. Peter, just retire, brother.
Well, that's a good place to leave it on. That is it for this week's show. Just a reminder, coming up, we are having more special guests in April 21st. It is going to be an hour long with Green Party of Ontario leader Mike Schreiner. And we're going to be doing Earth Day discussion. So any environmental questions and topics, send them in. And we will talk to Mr. Schreiner about them. And then the next week, Lloyd Longfield is going to be in the bottom half of the show to talk about all federal stuff. And we're trying to schedule counselors too, so stay tuned for those announcements. And
if you're listening, get in touch with us because... We will call you, but you can call us as well.
Yeah, so, you can.
Or email or whatever.
We'll consider applications. Anyway, our website is opensourcesguelph.com. Our Facebook page is Open Sources Newswire. Our Twitter feed is @OS_Guelph. And once again, you can download this and other episodes of Open Sources Guelph on Podbean and listen to them on whatever you listen to find podcasts on. As for me, I am at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, and you can go to my blog, guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Twitter. Scotty Hertz also on the Facebook. I blog at a place called The Spanner Book. There will be something new there this weekend. Was there something new last week, 2 weeks ago? I don't know.
2 weeks ago.
I'm going super local for this one this week. Ooh, in honor
teaser.
Of the counselors coming in. So, and I hope they'll all read it because, you know, it's local. Think local. Shop local. Listen to your local radio station by any means.
I was waiting for that one.
You find possible CFRU 93.3 FM.
Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour. Once again, that is CFRU 93.3, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back here next week with more Open Sources, Thursdays at 5 p.m. And until then, well, we'll see you then.
Good night, Graham.